This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. The FBI is probing 11 U.S. space scientists, either dead or missing. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
The White House and FBI are investigating a string of suspicious deaths and disappearances of at least 11 U.S. scientists, many of whom are involved in classified aerospace, nuclear, and defense research.
That is certainly putting it mildly. Deep research into anti-gravity jet propulsion, into special alloys made for high-intensity heat, an alloy called Mondelez, and so much more. Ideas and theories that most of us have never imagined that under their skill and expertise were actually coming true until they go missing or are found dead. 11 that we know of. Many of them I've been able to connect, 1, 2, 3, 4, to McCaslin, General Neil McCaslin, who oversaw funding and research, who was seeing over, commanding an entire Air Force base, but also was in charge of funding and overseeing research into many of these projects, joining us, an all-star panel, to make sense of what we are learning tonight. I want to go straight out to special guest joining us, Chris Mellore, Deputy Science Editor for Daily Mail. What is happening? Many people thought that this was fantastical, but it's not. And now the FBI has joined the probe, and I would like to add, in stark departure from normal FBI tactics, which we saw out in the Nancy Guthrie case. Remember, the FBI did not enter into the investigation until they were invited by Sheriff Nanos, who took his sweet time doing it and screwed up the investigation. Here, they have jumped in feet first into the disappearance of General McCaslin, which opens up an entire can of worms, and to the other 10 scientists, and that's 10 that we know of, Chris Mellore.
That's right, Nancy. Actually, this has been something that has been pushed by a lot on Capitol Hill. We've spoken to Congressman Eric Burleson and Tim Burchett at length, and they've been pushing for this investigation. A lot of the initial investigations were done by local police, and the congressmen have definitely push this into the forefront for a federal investigation as of late.
Many have been found dead. Many just simply disappear. And they disappear under very unusual circumstances. They are connected. That's where I start all criminal investigations, with connectivity. Is there anything linking them? And to you, Brian Fitzgibbons, joining us, Director of Operations, USPA Nationwide Security, who leads a team of investigators finding missing people, former Marine, Iraqi War vet. Brian, many people say these are not connected, but I, from over 1,000 miles away from where they went missing, have been able to connect 5 of them, 4 connected to General Neil McCaslin. Much happening out of the New Mexico jurisdiction, New Mexico and California. Listen to these connections and how the people went missing. Let's just start with Melissa Casillas, administrator at the El Los Alamos National Laboratory and the AFRL. So you've got the Air Force Lab, the Air Force Research Lab, and Los Alamos Nuclear Lab. She worked there. She worked with Chavez, Los Alamos Nuclear Lab, and AFRL. Monica Jacinto Riza worked at the AFRL, Air Force Research Lab. General McCaslin oversaw, actually ran, commandeered the AFRL, including the funding, specifically Riza's project. Stephen Garcia, government contractor, built parts for nuclear weapons connected to the AFRL. Well, I can connect more, but listen to how Melissa Casillas goes missing. She takes her daughter a Subway sandwich for lunch. She says she's going to work from home. She is spotted on camera, surveillance cam, leaving around 2 p.m. in the afternoon there in New Mexico. She never went for a walk in the heat. She took no cell phone, no keys, no identifying objects. Never seen again. Walking briskly eastbound. A shoe that may belong to her was found in a canyon. Even though cadaver dogs and scent dogs were brought out, nothing. Then you've got Monica Jacinto Riza. She got her funding from AFRL, and she was specializing in jet propulsion. She is on a hike in the LA National Forest. She's with a friend, a female friend who's just ahead of her. The friend looks back. She waves and smiles. A few minutes later, she looks back. Monica's gone. Gone. An intense digital search and more was conducted. Nothing. In the space of 10 minutes, she's gone. McCaslin, General William Neal McCaslin, who oversaw funding, is at home. In the space of less than 1 hour, Fitzgibbons, he disappears. His wife sees him. A repairman sees him. The wife leaves for a hair appointment around 11.04 a.m. She comes back around 12.04 a.m. p.m. He's gone. He leaves without his cell phone, his keys, a smartwatch which would have identified him and tracked him. He leaves behind those prescription glasses you see him wearing. He takes nothing to identify him, but he does take a .38 and he's wearing a pair of hiking boots. Listen to this. Sometime later, a gray Air Force sweatshirt is found discarded by the side of the road. The only thing that would have identified him as being with the Air Force is found discarded. There's Steve Garcia. Again, goes for a walk and never comes back. Leaving behind phone, watch, ID, you name it. How can these not be connected, Brian Fitzgibbons? And there's more.
You know, hey, there's a lack of obvious risk factors for a missing persons or a suicide case with all of these individuals that you've named. They have economic stability, government jobs with pensions. They have professional status, highly educated, highly influential in their fields, many of them. And then you add the caveat that they're connected, not loosely, but intimately connected through Air Force research labs and specific projects within that research function. And then you add in the additional caveat that a number of them have gone missing with the same circumstances, leaving Apple Watch and phone behind. This is highly alarming and ought to be investigated thoroughly by the FBI.
You know, what's interesting, Brian, is that I'm talking about the ones that are missing. The others are dead. A couple of them found submerged in bodies of water. Straight out to John Nance joining us, former supervisory special agent with the FBI for over 20 years. John, thank you for being with us tonight. John, why is it the FBI typically waits to be invited in on a local investigation? Why is that?
Well, the FBI doesn't have federal jurisdiction or primary jurisdiction in murder cases. There are some exceptions to that, but that's essentially why you don't see the FBI taking the lead role immediately in cases of that nature. But when it comes to matters like this, especially with the McCaslin disappearance, I think this directly implicates national security issues. In the first part of my career, I spent as a counterintelligence agent. And I can tell you from that perspective, the correlations that we see here are extremely disturbing. And I'm sure that's why Patel's FBI has gone into overdrive with conducting investigations into these matters. Particularly interesting is Amy Eskridge's case and what Frank Milburn had to say with regard to her, the use of directed energy weapons, things of that nature. I think all these things are going to be looked at and analyzed with a fine-tooth comb, so to speak, by the FBI.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Their research, Mr. Nance, was so advanced, it's beyond what many of us can even imagine. For instance, Amy Eskridge, allegedly dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. This is after she texted friends saying, "If I am found dead, I did not commit suicide." She was working on anti-gravity jet propulsion, which is amazing. It's specifically, she was working with her father on an idea she wanted to present to NASA. And it dealt with an aircraft called TR-3B, T-Toy R-3B Brother, a triangular craft. And with anti-gravity jet propulsion, that craft could go up, down, to either side, catty-cornered, diagonally, and at rapid rates of speed, unlike anything that we are familiar with, basically defying the laws of gravity. That's what anti-gravity jet propulsion is, and it can be used for a myriad of purposes. The other woman we are discussing, Monica Jacinto Reza, worked at AFRL. That's where she got her funding anyway. She was working on an amazing alloy, a metal that was highly heat resistant to be used on rockets called Mondelez. Many of us have never even heard of that. Now, you mentioned directed energy attacks. And I now know, since I've been investigating this, that a Russian agent was here, apprehended, here in the U.S. in the 2020s with such a device. So this is no longer, in other words, it's like shooting a gun, except it's microwaves. Yes, something that many people only imagine is real. I didn't know that until I started investigating this. Could you describe what that is?
Well, sure. The stuff you're talking about is not science fiction. The triangular-shaped craft that you're describing have been seen and reported about for decades. These individuals, Reza, for instance, was working at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is directly connected to General McCaslin. It's also directly connected to the UAP phenomenon. We've had several congressional hearings with regard to it. And wherever you fall or whether you come down on this issue, it is at its base level a government transparency issue. Eskridge, you know, working on anti-gravity technology or field propulsion technology would be paradigm shifting. So these technologies are, in many people's opinions, the result of crash retrieval programs. We've had several congressional hearings with regard to this. I've written several columns at Town Hall with regard to these matters. I've spoken to Representative Burchett about this matter. So we're not talking about science fiction. We're talking about science fact with regard to what these individuals were working on. The directed energy weapon that you have mentioned is a real weapon, obviously, and as Mr. Milburn has described in very detailed fashion, it's essentially a microwave, a focused microwave energy beam that is capable of cooking you from the inside out. It'll penetrate through a window. It'll penetrate through drywall. All these things taken together, it is a very serious national security threat. To go back to General McCasland, he was responsible for managing the funding of 80% of the military's SAP programs. Those are special access programs, which, as the name denotes, are access controls of some of the government's most highly classified information. And of course, his work at Wright-Patterson with regard to the Air Force's research and development program, I think that's like a $2 billion program he oversaw. So he's literally a walking hard drive of highly classified information. So the FBI is going to be very, very interested in determining what exactly has happened to him.
I've listened very, very carefully to his wife's 911 call, John Nance, and she said specifically, "I don't think he wants to be found. I think he plans not to be found. I've noticed that none of the families want to speak out. It's almost as if they're afraid." You mentioned Frank Milburn, former British intelligence officer who knew Amy Eskridge very well, and he is joining us now. To the rest of the panel, please stay with us as I go to Mr. Milburn.
Several of the scientists leave their homes and vanish without their phones, while others are found dead, prompting concerns of a sinister pattern rather than random events.
Joining us tonight, a special guest, a guest that has intimate knowledge regarding the death of Amy Eskridge. As you all know by now, brilliant, brilliant scientist. Frank Milburn joining us, former British intelligence officer who knew Amy very well, and he spoke with Amy just hours before her death. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Frank. First of all, thank you for joining us tonight. But Amy Eskridge, brilliant scientist, was found with allegedly a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head, Huntsville, Alabama, near the NASA space station, which is not just in Florida, but also in Huntsville. She texted with you some very disturbing information. First of all, tell me about your relationship with Amy.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we met online. At first, I thought it was an anonymous account, and I thought it was a very amusing middle-aged scientist who was ranting about UFOs, but in a very, very intelligent and funny way. And then slowly we got in contact that way, and slowly she revealed to me who she was. And I realized, wow, this is a brilliant young scientist. And I did my background checks on her as well, because that's what I do. And then over the course of the year, we got to know each other extremely well.
So you were pen pals of sort for over a year.
Yes. Initially, we weren't talking about UFOs. We were talking about UFOs, but slowly as she kind of, I got her confidence and she got my confidence, she started to tell me about the harassment and all the things that happened to her, and also showing me the proof, showing me the videos and the photos and things like that. And also as well, she was, she'd be at work and she'd put me on a video with her coworkers as well, and they'd be telling me the same thing. So there's absolutely no doubt in my mind as to what was going on with her.
I want to talk very briefly about Amy's studies. Again, a brilliant scientist. Now, to my understanding, of course, I'm just a trial lawyer, she was studying anti-gravity. Is that correct? Anti-gravity propulsion.
She was interested, yes, in anti-gravity. She was interested in free energy, which is the extraction of energy from the ether in potentially unlimited amounts, which would obviously change the whole way that we have and produce energy on Earth, and potentially would help every poor country in the world. But it could also be very dangerously used as a weapon. What she was actually working on when she was attacked with the directed energy weapon that's been heavily that was especially documented with videos, testimony, and other witness there. She was actually working for Homeland Security on a project which would defend U.S. subways across the continental United States from chemical, bio, and radiological attack. So, you know, across the board, she had a very interesting portfolio of things that she was interested in and working on. But, you know, she was an American
patriot.
Can I
circle back to what you just said, Frank Milburn, that she was working with Homeland Security on methods to protect public transport in the U.S.? Could you expand on that, please?
Yes, certainly. She and a colleague, they were approached. I actually went to sat in on a couple of the meetings with people, senior members from Homeland Security and from another agency that I'm not going to mention. Amy was there. A contact of mine was there who was ex-American Special Operations. And there was a and one of her co-workers was there. And they were basically discussing with Homeland Security everything from directed energy weapon attacks. But the specific project that they were working on was to design a system whereby all the subways across the continental United States could be protected from biological, chemical, and radiological attack, a detection system, effectively.
Mr. Milburn joining us, former British intelligence officer. The reason I wanted you to tell us a little bit more about her project she was working on with Homeland Security is that many people, many naysayers are suggesting that she was somehow had mental or emotional problems. I find that very difficult to believe as a former Fed myself, working for the government my entire legal career, that Homeland Security would enlist the aid of any scientist that had a mental impairment. I find that very, if not impossible, difficult to believe. Now, Amy, 34 years old, had also been researching, as I first mentioned, anti-gravity, advanced technology with anti-gravity propulsion. And what is interesting about that to me is anti-gravity propulsion, when we think of aircraft of any type, be it a plane, a helicopter, a rocket, we are within the framework of our known laws of gravity. But anti-gravity jet propulsion would mean that the aircraft could go up, down, side to side, and at rapid rates of speed, unlike anything we have ever seen. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, if you're looking now, you know, we're looking, the next big step for mankind is the, you know, colonization of space, effectively, and exploiting space's mineral resources, and also exploiting space strategically. I mean, we, you know, they've just gone to the moon, Artemis, and they're looking, you know, for there, have a base and then be able to jump to Mars. So if you had this anti-gravity technology and also, you know, free energy, potentially, you know, to as a fuel system for other propulsion, you'd be streets ahead of anybody using, or streets ahead, you'd be light years ahead of anybody using traditional rocketry technology.
Also, she was working with her father, Dr. Eskridge. They had founded a research institute together on something called TR-3B, which is a triangular type of aircraft that she thought would be suited to that would be compatible with her anti-gravity jet propulsion. Now, this is very hard for most of us to take in. Most of us are not literally rocket scientists like Amy and her cohorts. I want to talk to you about the texts that she sent you just before her death. What did she say?
Well, the immediate text sort of in the month before her death was, you know, if I committed suicide, I didn't. If you hear that, if I overdosed, I didn't. If you hear that I killed myself or anybody else, I didn't. And this was text to myself. There were other texts to other people, you know, co-workers. I just got a message actually, you know, the day before yesterday from somebody I'd been in contact with, a very close friend of Amy, who was also subject to attacks, who just said, like, no way did she commit suicide. And, you know, well done for putting out there. They don't want to put it out there because they've been attacked. And they have, you know, they have things to protect. So this was over a course of the year. Then she's verbally
telling
me, you know, I'm being attacked. I'm sorry?
Who is they? Who do you think they? I'm not in disagreement. I am not in disagreement. Because the best way to cover up a homicide is to make it look like a suicide. And I have personally investigated and prosecuted cases where the victim was portrayed as mentally imbalanced, having committed suicide, when in fact they were the victim of a homicide. When you say they have a reason to kill her, I assume you could be talking about a foreign entity that wants to extract, use, and implement her work. It could be corporate espionage, someone that wants that technology, those ideas to make money off of it. It could be a jealous coworker. I don't know what it is, but when you say they had reason to kill her, who in your mind is they?
Well, I'll tell you, somebody, initially I looked at, you know, I was looking, thinking of like the GRU, Russian military intelligence, or, you know, the Chinese. But you have to understand, this is an actor who actors over a period of like maybe 3 years or even more were harassing her over a period of time. Vehicle surveillance, directed energy weapon attacks, social engineering, break-ins, hacking. That's a lot of moving parts.
Hold on, Frank. You got me drinking out of the fire hydrant. That's too much too fast. Okay. You mentioned the potential of Russian military, of Chinese intelligence, and I don't know why that seems so hard to believe, difficult to believe. How many people do Russian intelligence have to throw out a window or poison with perfume? We hear about it all the time. This type of espionage happens all the time right under our noses. So it is not difficult to believe it could be happening here. But you mentioned being harassed. Harassed how? Yeah. And also you mentioned a directed power hit on her body from which she allegedly sustained multiple bruises and showed them to people. And when we're talking about that, is it something akin to, for instance, the Havana syndrome?
This wasn't alleged. It's all documented. And I actually showed, you know, the images of her to a doctor friend of mine. And she said, yeah, those are consistent, you know, with directed energy, microwave weapons. Havana syndrome is mostly acoustic. But these were the directed energy microwave weapons that literally, you know, fry your body, fry your central nervous system, fry your spine, give you all kinds of gastrointestinal problems. But the point that I was coming to before was that this was an actor which had a lot of resources on the ground and that managed to pass for a long, long period of time, basically unimpeded, and that may or may not have been able to suborn or subvert law enforcement and authorities at local, state, and federal level. Okay, so they avoided counterintelligence scrutiny. When Amy went to talk to the FBI, she said, thanks, Frank, for setting this up through your friend. She talked to the FBI for 3 months, and then the FBI turned around and said, we don't have jurisdiction on this case, to cover this case. Well, hang on, they are the counterintelligence agency, domestic, for the United States. So why didn't they have jurisdiction? I don't get that.
Well, as a matter of fact, I learned last night, that the FBI, without invitation, which is very unusual in our country for the FBI to jump into an alleged homicide or an alleged missing person case, they have jumped feet first into the disappearance of General McCasland. So yeah. I find that very curious that they are taking jurisdiction in that case. And there are calls from Congress to have hearings on this issue of the missing and dead scientists. So apparently they are now getting involved. We just showed a photo of Eskridge's red hands. What is that?
That was when she was working literally on that project for Homeland Security. And she was, I think, about six stories up, but they got hit with a directed energy weapon. And she got burnt on her hands, not on her face, I believe, it was on her hands. So it's something directed specifically at her hands. And there's another scientist. I actually sent you the videos. There's another scientist with her in the background, and you can hear him say it's a directed energy weapon, a microwave directed energy weapon. So there's two witnesses there, two scientists who are expert witnesses and able to describe exactly what is happening to them.
What is that? See, for many of us, that sounds like a futuristic movie plot, but it's not. It's in the here and now, directed energy attack. What is it?
Well, there's her air gap computer there, and then she's basically being pounded with microwave weapons. She's saying in this case, it's basically they're trying to build a three-dimensional picture of her hands to see what she's typing on, because she's removed the Wi-Fi card from the computer so that it can't be hacked, because she suffered so many hacking attempts. I mean, literally every other day, she was doing a completely clean install on all her computers and her phones.
What was it, Frank Milburn, that was so sensitive that she was working on?
Well, I mean, it could be, you know, she had all this harassment that was leading up to it. So I presume that was, I assessed as wanting to her to desist from the work. Okay, she was never offered a job. Nobody ever said, here's some money, come and work for us. It's like they wanted her to desist from it. And then they did these microwave energy weapons attack, knowing that that would debilitate her so that she would be unable to continue with her work slowly. And then eventually, because she was too stubborn, she ended up dying. Now, I can't say, hand on my heart, that that was murder. What I can say, it was very, very suspicious. And you will say a lot of people saying, oh, she was off her meds, she was crazy, she was this or that. I spoke to her every day. She called me 4 hours before she died, and she said that she was feeling fine. Okay, now, did she have stress? Yes. Did she have PTSD? Certainly. Did she have hypervigilance? Certainly, because she was under constant attack the whole time, and anybody normal would. So, but she wasn't hallucinating. She wasn't delusional. You could see that every day. And you know, she's going to work. She's on the car, in the car, talking to me for half an hour. She gets to work. She's talking to me again from work with her coworkers. This is someone who is, like, you know, functional and working at a very high level scientifically, a highly intelligent woman.
Now, you submitted findings regarding this to Congress, and you concluded Eskridge did not kill herself. Isn't that true?
Well, what I said is that it's highly suspicious, and I believe that she'd been killed by an aerospace company, or, you know, as I said before, an actor that had the impunity and the ability to be able to act on the ground undiscovered for so long. So I just think that we need to start with looking at the directed energy weapon attack on her when she was doing on that project for Homeland Security, and then all the harassment, and then work forward from that and see how that could have led to her death. That would seem logical to me.
Question. Could you explain in very rudimentary terms what you mean by a directed energy attack? How does that work?
Okay, sure. So you have basically, there was a Russian guy who was caught with one, I believe, 2 years ago in the States, and it was in a congressional hearing in 2024. You can have like a pickup truck or a vehicle. You have like a sort of an emitter. It's like it emits what's like, you know, kind of like microwaves, like you get in a microwave oven, but in a very focused way. So then you have like a power source as well, which you can carry in the vehicle. Then you point that at the window, and it will go through drywalls as well. And, you know, it, depending on the power of the emitter, it could be anywhere from like 50 meters to 100 meters, maybe more. I don't claim to be a technical expert on directed energy weapons, but you point it where you want it to go. Presumably before that, you will have established a pattern of life. So you would know roughly where, okay, so at 9 o'clock, she goes down to her laboratory or whatever. And then you'd set up the directed energy weapon emitter in your vehicle and wait for her to be at a specific point in space and time, and then hit zap.
Frank, why are you speaking out?
Because she trusted me to, and it was what she wanted. And I really, you know, didn't want to at all, because I know the upset that it brings to her family and her loved ones. But I've had support from her coworkers and her friends who are saying, you know, you need to do this. I was basically her dead lady switch. She trusted me when I first met her, and she first revealed who she was, and she started telling me about this. She said, because of your background, you will believe what I'm saying, because you will understand the tradecraft. She goes, if I go to the cops, they will think I'm crazy, because this harassment was designed in such a way, going through the panty drawers and all the other things, was designed in such a way that if you went to the cops and said, this is what's going on, they would think that she was crazy. She said, you will not think I'm crazy. And she goes, if anything happens to me, here is all the evidence, and I want you to get it out there.
Joining us tonight is Frank Milburn, who knew Amy Eskridge very well. Eskridge had founded a research institute with her father. And together, they were exploring many, many advanced technological theories that suddenly, under her skilled hands, were no longer just theories, including anti-gravity jet propulsion. Frank, can you imagine what a foreign entity or a private corporate entity would pay, what they would give, what they would do to get that knowledge, that technology that she had created?
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe it was a case of they'd developed it themselves, and they didn't want her, in her own words, an upstart young, a brilliant young scientist, stealing their lunch, as Amy would say. But, you know, this cuts to the very heart of American democracy. If you can potentially subvert, you know, local, state and federal law enforcement. And I want to, you know, I came forward as well because I want to prevent other scientists and other young, brilliant young scientists from being killed. I want to, you know, the United States is my ally. I've always worked with Americans in and out of uniform, you know, in peacetime and in war. So America is a country that I love, and I love America's people. And I think America is a great democracy. It's the greatest democracy in the world. And that has to be protected. And this kind of activity fundamentally is rot at the heart of that democracy, in my opinion.
Frank Milburn, you are risking a lot to come forward, and we are truly and deeply grateful Thank you, Mr. Milburn.
Well, thank you. And by having it out there and I've sent you all the files, then if anything happens to me, then you've got another story, eh?
I don't consider you a story. I consider you to be a very, very brilliant now friend. And we will do our best to get Amy's facts. I don't want to say story out there. I'm very disturbed by the autopsy findings that this was immediately determined to be a self-inflicted wound. Very curious. What is her family's position on this? Because I've noticed that the majority of the families connected to the missing and dead scientists refuse to give a statement. They don't want to put this out there. They don't want to be part of it. Why is that? It's almost as if they are afraid.
People are afraid, yes. I can't comment on the family. You'd have to ask them. In fact, don't ask them because they don't want to be asked. I know that. For a fact, they don't have anything to do with this. It's the very last thing that they want. It's not going to bring their daughter back, and it's not going to bring my friend back. But if it can stop somebody else being killed or harassed and basically having their life ruined, because don't forget, Amy was completely isolated as well. She couldn't have a boyfriend. She couldn't see her friends. She couldn't do anything because anybody who was around her would be liable to attack as well. So, you know, it was just a total isolation and a total spectrum harassment on her. I'm very, very sorry for everything, and I'm very sorry for having to speak out, but I believe that it's fundamentally important to do so for all the reasons that I outlined.
You know, we Americans think you British are way too polite. You do not have to apologize for telling the truth, ever. And we are deeply, as I said, grateful. I cannot ignore that before her death, she said, if you read, I committed suicide. I did not. I will not. I did not commit suicide. And then suddenly she's dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound in Huntsville, Alabama, where the NASA space station is. Thank you for being with us tonight, Mr. Milburn. Thank you.
Thank you for the attention that you've given it and the dignity that you've given her. And I appreciate that very much from all across the media that I've spoken to so far. Thank you very much.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Each of these victims had high or top level security clearance at specific national research facilities. Many are connected by facilities such as the Air Force Research Lab, Los Alamos, and more, NASA. In other words, more than one victim can be linked to a single facility and to each other. For instance, Chavez working with Casillas at Los Alamos, vanishing within weeks of each other, both having top clearance. But seemingly the connection is McCaslin, John Nance.
It's not surprising for someone who was in his position to be connected to so many people in this R&D community. A particular note, I think, is Reza's work with what's called memory metal, and that's a little bit different than the material that you mentioned earlier. And to kind of go back to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base connection, this memory metal is believed by many people to be a material science's direct descendant of material that was recovered at the Roswell crash and delivered to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. That information is not in dispute, that whatever was recovered from Roswell was delivered to Wright-Patterson. So her work with regard to that particular metal is a very, very interesting connection. I think people are afraid to speak out about this topic because, well, the government entities have been very, very successful in conducting a disinformation campaign with regard to the American public. So you mentioned UFO and people immediately begin to snicker, right? And that's because of the disinformation campaign conducted by members of our own intelligence community. And in large part for good reason. I think that the American public, as Burchett and Representative Luna and others have made very clear, the American public should be aware of this information. I think there are certain aspects of it that for national security reasons should probably remain classified, but the government shouldn't be hiding the fact that UAPs exist And we have almost incontrovertible evidence to that fact. One of the hearings was attended by Lieutenant Commander Fravor, probably one of the most credible UAP witnesses that we've heard from. And he's the individual that was involved in the very famous Tic Tac video. And his testimony on Capitol Hill with regard to the capabilities of the unidentified phenomena that he witnessed far exceed anything that our material science can hope to achieve at this point.
Mr. Nance, you mentioned UAPs. I assume you're referring to unidentified anomalous phenomena?
Yes, that's correct. That's the new word for UFO.
And that is, yes. You know, that is precisely, Mr. Nance, why I have not mentioned UFOs since the beginning of tonight's program, because I do not like these victims to be thrown in the pot to stew with all the UFO and alien conspiracy theorists, because it minimizes the fact that these are brilliant scientists, all of them PhDs, brilliant in their field, and known to be brilliant. As a matter of fact, Amy Eskridge actually worked with Homeland Security, and I, as did all of these scientists. They were all top level with secret security clearances. So the government is not going to allow that with a bunch of crackpots, very simply put. What do you make of the disappearance of McCasland? His wife did not say he committed suicide. His wife said he doesn't want to be found. And I know for a fact the mother, Melissa Cassius, would not have willingly left her daughter. Just walk out without any ID, without phone, with nothing, and never seen again. Like, this is a... like so many of the others, it's the MO, the modus operandi, the method of operation. They all just walk away with no identification and are never seen again. It is almost as if they are in fear for their families. Obviously not in fear for themselves. There's Melissa right there. She just dropped off a Subway sandwich for her daughter, and she's never seen again. And this is true of nearly all of the missing. What do you make of it, John?
Well, another interesting data point about Melissa's disappearance, I believe her husband stated that he observed her using her her security card at the facility. And then later she made the statement that she needed to return home to retrieve her identification card. So that's a very, very strange data point with regard to her disappearance. And as to Amy Eskridge's story, the fact that she was working with Homeland Security would argue against these allegations that she was suffering from some sort of mental disorder or distress. I would assume she would have some level of security clearance with Homeland Security, especially given the type of thing that she was working on. I believe some sort of subway defense system. I don't really know a lot of the details about that. But
yes, you know, I'm familiar with it, John. She was working on a project that would protect Americans on subways and other rapid transit. And she was heavily involved in that. So I find it difficult to believe that a scientist working on a project for the government is crazy, for lack of a better word. Chris Mallord joining us, Deputy Science Editor, Daily Mail. As a matter of fact, back to one of the victims that have received very little attention, and that is the mom I keep referring to, Melissa Cassius. Did you know, Chris, I'm sure you do, that when her effects were found there at her home that she left behind, both her work phone and her cell phone had been factory reset. Both of them had been wiped before she went on a walk that afternoon.
Yes, it is very highly unusual. Basically, she had a work phone, personal phone. Everything was left in her house, all of her possessions, her keys, And she was just, she walked out without them. I mean, for a phone to be completely reset, basically leaving no trace of who she was in contact with, highly unusual. The former intelligence agents that we've spoken to, former members of the FBI, definitely see something that, that needs to be investigated at the federal level. And on to, if I may veer off to Eskridge for a second, we also have her text messages provided by Frank Milburn regarding the threats against her life that we've just published as well, and the work that she was doing in this regard. So, I mean, these people left breadcrumbs for the world to find. And we're just trying to put these pieces together and ask the questions that haven't been asked to this point.
Chris Malore joining us, Deputy Science Editor, Daily Mail, Brian Fitzgibbons, USPA Nationwide Security, Frank Milburn, former British intelligence, and John Nance, former supervisory special agent with the FBI over 20 years. If you know or think you know anything regarding these deaths and disappearances, please dial 800-CALL-FBI, 800-225-5324. We remember an American hero, Deputy Sheriff Jesse Perez, Dawson County Sheriff's, Texas, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a wife, now widow, Linda, and three daughters, Mackenzie, Zoe, and Shelby. American hero, Sheriff Jesse Perez. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.